Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Fighter, the Writer, and the Fans podcast. So I'm kind of doing this one on the road. I'm actually going on a road trip to go see my daughter. And I do want to apologize to my fans, my viewers, my listeners, my supporters, all the people that have been kind of sticking with us throughout the years. I've been honestly going through a little bit of some depression and having to deal with my own mental health. And I know my co-host is kind of honestly dealing with something similar and kind of having some family issues. But I don't want you guys to feel like we forgot about you. I don't want you guys to think that we stopped the show. Honestly, sad to say, as most of us do know, life happens. And it happens to us, not for us, more likely than we like it to. But that kind of is the reality of existing as a human being in this world. You know, we kind of have to be as reactive and proactive and as resilient as possible. And me, myself, I've actually kind of been struggling with that. As many of you know, I've been rocking with the show for a while. I've been fighting for custody for my daughter for, you know, the last few years now. Last battle didn't go too much my way. So having to mitigate as much as the depression and the sadness that does come with that, so I can honestly try to overcome whatever mental setbacks and emotional setbacks I have to deal with and still try to be as proactive as a father as possible, being as involved in my daughter's life. But that still does honestly weigh a little heavily on my mind. But with that getting out of the way, I'm going to go straight into what I actually want to talk about, which is UFC 281. I'm super duper looking forward to this card, honestly. This is one of the best cards, I think, of the year by far. And to be honest, I'm probably going to have some fight of the year contenders on this one. The ones I'm looking forward to the most are, I'm just going to, as the top three cards, top three fights. You know, you have the Israel Adesanya versus Addis Cabello fight. You know, that's a trilogy matchup, but it's their first matchup in MMA. But it has such an amazing backstory, and there's a lot that goes into that fight, which honestly makes it super duper marketable and interesting for the fans overall to just honestly want to watch and digest and break down. Me, as a purebred MMA connoisseur, as I like to call myself, this is the one at the top of the card I'm looking forward to the most. And I'm going to go on down. The Carla Esparza versus Wei Li Zhang. We're going to see if Carla's actually able to defend her title for the first time successfully. She actually was able to get the title away from Rose. I'm going to actually use some of those parallels. You know, she was one of the first people to beat Rose, kind of shut her out, finished her even. And, you know, it's kind of something similar to the fight at the top of the hour, but I'm going to dive into that a little bit later. And then, honestly, this is my low-key favorite card on the my favorite fight on the card, which is the Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler. We've seen that they've had some words back and forth, things like that. As Michael Chandler's been working his way up through the organization, making more of a name for himself in the UFC world. He already came over with a pretty high, varied pedigree from Bellator. You know, he's kind of OG in MMA, but he's one of the ones that came over from Bellator and was able to make a name for himself as along the likes of him as Eddie Alvarez and another crossover from a different organization, Justin Gaethje. We've seen some actual pretty decent transfers over, but I think this one is going to be one of the more interesting stylistic matchups on the card. And so, super duper looking forward to this fight card. The final one I actually do want to touch on is the Frankie Edgar versus Chris Gutierrez. As we know, Frankie Edgar has moved on down to bantamweight. He's starting to have a little bit of success. I think his style matches up really, really well with the guys at that weight class. As we know right now, bantamweight is probably one of the most fiery divisions. You know, you got quick guys, good power, lots of finishes, lots of action. It's honestly probably, in my opinion, a little biased though, yeah, but probably the most action-packed division in UFC currently. We have a lot of amazing matchups and things to look forward to in the future with these guys, but I'm really looking forward to this fight as well. So without further ado, I'm just going to dive straight in. I'm going to work my way backwards on up. So I'll first just start talking about that Frankie Edgar, Chris Gutierrez fight. So Chris Gutierrez, he's had mixed results in his UFC career. You know, split decision there. Actually, just came off of an amazing spinning back fist finish and so on and so forth. But I want to kind of talk about his skill set and how I think it matches up against Frankie Edgar's. So when he got that finish for that spinning back fist, he actually got into a little bit of a trouble for that same move earlier. And with a person like Frankie that's not really super stationary, that mixes up the angles really well, that switches it from high and low and enters into the clinch and kind of uses his high and low to set up takedowns, to set up his striking, I don't think a move like that would be as effective. We did see that Frankie has got finished, you know, by the likes of Sanhagen and such. But you got to think of the level of competition and fights that Frankie's been dealing with for almost the entirety of his career. He's always fought at the high level, even though he is getting up in age now. And we do see that athletic attributes start to hinder away. But that is when something like skill set starts to pick up for. And Frankie's one of the most root fighters that are, you know, He builds a game plan with his team. He has a certain set of moves and things like that. And he implements that game plan the best way possible, makes adjustments throughout the fight to look ahead and get the finish. And he's normally super-duper durable when coming and taking these hard shots over time, as we've all seen if we follow the sport. That chin does start to deteriorate. And as explosive and as dynamic as Gutierrez is, I don't think if he has enough layers and experience yet to be able to put Frankie away. And if there's going to be a decision, I'm definitely going to give the nod towards Frankie on that one. I'm going to go on up and talk about the Michael Chandler, Dustin Poirier. Like I said, this one's I'm looking forward to the most. Dustin's a super duper big puncher, amazing jiu-jitsu, good wrestling when he decides to use it, good takedown defense, unless it comes against the likes of Khabib, which I don't think anyone's really honestly been able to kind of stop too many of his takedowns. And Michael Chandler, he's another really route guy, super duper explosive, amazing athlete, phenomenal wrestling, good power. Dustin does have a little bit of a reach advantage on this, but I think Michael Chandler's been dealing with that for a majority of his career at this point. So honestly, this comes down to who's able to implement their game a lot more. We've seen it too many times as a wrestler starts to fall in love with their power, they kind of start to forget that that's what got them to the dance. I'm hoping that for this fight that Chandler does start to lean on that wrestling a little bit more, start to mix in the takedowns, look to get some striking exchanges off of that, start to fight off the clinch and things like that. But with a guy like Dustin Poirier, you really do have to worry about reckless shots and engagement, because he does have really good jiu-jitsu. He has good guillotines, good anacondas, good darces. I really hope that he does not spam that guillotine. As we've seen, I know it was his last-ditch effort against Khabib, and it is a really taxing move to an extent because it does start to burn your arms up. I think he should just use that to initially kind of like, as we call it, pull the pants up, use that to stop any further engagements from Michael Chandler from advance upon position, then break it, look to dig underhooks, and start to separate up the cage and start to pick him apart. Dustin's boxing has been advancing phenomenal in his last recent fights from what I've seen. He's always been a super big punch, always had good combinations, good footwork and things like that. But we really started seeing him put it together really well when it comes to just having flowy combinations and kind of doing that pat power. He look, everything's not hard. He mixes in hard shots with the light shots and just looks to get an amazing finish. So for this one, I'm going to have to go with Dustin. I think he's fought almost every single champion during his era, you know, at both weight classes for the most part. And I do think that experience is going to honestly add some level of confidence to it. Chandler is a super explosive guy. I think if he does get it done, it will be, you know, I think he'll probably get more of a... I don't see so many people decisioning Poirier, though, honestly. If he does land a big shot, you know, he might be able to kind of, like, hurt Poirier, chain it in with some wrestling and look for, like, you know, maybe like a rear naked choke or something like that. I think if Chandler does get the nod, it'll either be from like maybe like a ground and pound, but I'll lean more towards a submission. I don't think there's many people that's finishing Dustin Poirier on the feet, to be honest. I do think that Poirier, if he's able to keep the fight standing, stop those takedowns, mix in his shots, start to get Chandler a little bit more, get Chandler tired. I have seen where it looks like he's gotten a little more exhausted in some of his fights. I don't see Poirier getting too tired, especially not in a 3-round fight. So if I do give the nod to Chandler, I would give it by submission, as we've seen that Poirier has been submitted a few times. I don't think that Chandler is as big as a submission threat as when it has caught Poirier, but I do think he still has that he still has those skills in his back pocket. He needs to, you know, lay on it. And if his team's done their homework, so on and so forth, which I know they have at the highest level, there's no stone that's getting unturned. There's nothing that's getting missed. So I do think that would be his more likely path to success. Fourier, honestly, I think he honestly just has to kind of keep the same mindset and skill set he kind of used against Justin Gaethje, and just stop the takedowns if they're there, and then pick them apart on the feet and look for the big shots. And they do have a common opponent, you know. They both fought Oliveira, they both fought Gaethje, and as we've seen, one got the nod, one did not. One had success in certain areas, and one did not. So it's honestly gonna be funny, but I do think the closest parallel would be the Justin Gaethje and to both gentlemen, and the way that Dustin Poirier dealt with Justin Gaethje, and the way that Chandler tried to deal with Justin Gaethje is what's gonna lead me to honestly give my nod towards Dustin Poirier. Now we're gonna talk about the Carlos Esparza versus Weili Zhang. Boy, I think this is a terrible, terrible, terrible matchup for Carla Esparza, personally. I might be wrong. She might have added some wrinkles to the game, so on and so forth. But if you look at their common opponents, and the one I would like to lean on the most is going to be Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Joanna honestly put Carla through the meat grinder. The pace, the volume, the output, the takedown defense, the layers on layers of striking that she was able to honestly just overwhelm and finish Carla with. The way that Weili was able to deal with that with her own layers and mixtures and flares and the strength and power that she has to offer, I honestly do not think that Carla's going to be able to compete, sad to say. And granted, that was a young Joanna where she was the boogie woman. You know, that was the beginning of her reign of terror. And Weili kind of caught on the middle tier of that, so on and so forth. She's already lost a few times at that point, but still, the skill that Weili has, the explosiveness, the dynamicism, the takedown defense, the power, I personally do not think that Carla's gonna be able to pose much of a threat besides the wrestling. I do think that if we know Carla Esparza, how she fights. I think she's gonna spam the takedowns. She's going to look to get it to the ground, look to get some ground and pound, look to punch, punch, pound, and try and get a submission. But I don't think that she's going to be able to, if she is able to take Weili down, I don't think she's able to keep her down. I think Whaley's too fast, too strong. I think there's way too many weapons that Weili has to use against Carla for Carla to even have the confidence to push forward and to even get a clinch or a takedown to look for the finish. I think Weili honestly just sticks and moves, lands some big power shots on Carla, and gets a TKO, if not a pure out KO, sad to say. But I'm honestly looking forward to seeing just how much Carla's grown. You know, she's been doing this for a few years now, but I think we're gonna see a different champion at the end of the night. I'm looking forward to the fight overall. You know, I'm gonna see how their skills match up, so on and so forth, and what it has to mean for the future of the division. Because the way she got the belt back from Rose, I think it was more of a psychological effect more than a skill effect. Being the first person to kind of finish Rose, I think, honestly, even though it allowed Rose to grow leaps and bounds and to get so much better, things like that, I think it was more sort of a psychological aspect that kind of allowed Rose to let the victory get away from her. I think she was more so timid and she wasn't that fiery, explosive dynamo that we're used to seeing. I think she was more so timid than normal just due to the psychological aspect. And the Weili's not going to have that. She's going to come forward. She's going to look to get big power shots. She's going to beat her up in the clinch a little bit. It's probably honestly going to look like another Jessica Andrade, where the person trying to come forward. Of course, Carla's nowhere near as big a puncher as Jessica Andrade, but I think the same thing forward with the coming forward, looking to pressure, looking to kind of work their game plan. And when it comes to the footwork, I definitely give that edge to Weili. I think just the layers that Weili has to her game and the layers that Carla has, I think Weili's bag of tricks just is deeper. She has more tools to hurt her with. She has more ways to finish the fight versus Carla. We know what she's going to do. She's going to want to make the fight, you know, more of a more dirty, more of a clinch fight, more want to take her down, drag her into deep waters, and trying either get a late finish, get her tired, something like that. But I'm looking forward to seeing this fight regardless. Now, the card at the top of the hour, Israel Adesanya versus Addis Pereira. That is going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal fight. Regardless of, I think it's more so the story that sells this fight than anything else, because anybody else that's had that many of fights in the UFC would definitely not be getting a title shot, regardless of the caliber of finish, and then regardless of the opponent that he just finished as well. I think that a person with 8 or 9 fights normally would not be going up against a champion the caliber of Israel Adesanya, but based on the story that they have and the marketing power that the UFC does have and the story that they're going to be able to kind of sell with what they are selling. And with the fact that Israel has literally almost left the division at this point. Like, he literally has almost finished everybody in the top 5 twice at this point, or fought them twice at least. But I'm going to dive way more deeper into this one. This is the one I spent the most time researching, the most time kind of, you know, looking at their stats, looking at their fights, looking at their attributes. And then I'm big on sports psychology, if you guys don't know. You know, it's one of the things I'm studying. Might even get my master's in it, you know. Big debate on this. I think it helps athletes or hinders athletes the most, especially in combat sports. So we can see if Izzy's going to have a similar thing how Rose had when it, you know, came back to fighting someone that's already finished you. But with the kind of person that Israel is, I don't think, especially because he's had some success in both fights at that, I'm hoping that it won't have any real effects on the actual fight and hinder his performance in any way. So I'm just going to dive right into it. So we've seen with both the fights that Izzy had major success. But he had success when he was pushing forward and in the clinch and, you know, kind of overwhelming Pereira, as he does to most opponents. But Pereira's a patient fighter, you know. He has the power, which is the equalizer, you know. But it can be a blessing and a curse. Where you kind of, you're a patient guy, you're just looking for your shots, and you have 5 minutes to work for Izzy. 5 minutes and 5 rounds. That is a lot of time to kind of just build up a lead and kind of start to get residual damage and possibly just run away with a decision. And honestly, I'm just going to give my thoughts on it early now. I do think that Izzy gets a decision. If we look at the past parallels, if you look at their prior fights where Izzy came forward, was able to kind of just beat him up in a clinch a little bit, pick apart a hit. So Alex has a very, very high guard. You know, he's one of the guys that's able to make that work, so on and so forth. But I think that's more successful in kickboxing where the gloves are bigger. You're not able to clinch for as long, so on and so forth. You're not able to manipulate as well because, you know, your hand is in an enclosed glove. Versus in MMA, where it's a smaller gloves, your hands are open, and you're kind of able to find openings better, get your gloves through a little bit better. I do think that Izzy's going to have way more success if he does it in this fight. I think his greatest path to success in this fight is to hand fight, to pick around the guard, to not be on that back foot. I think he is a great back foot fighter. Don't get me wrong. You know, yeah, he leans back a lot, things like that, as he got the finish for Robert Whittaker that way. But I do think that is a possible way to get hurt against Pereira. I think he just needs to pick his hands up a little bit. I'm not one to talk. I know my coaches get on me all the time about this. Pick up your hands, so on and so forth. But pushing the action forward, hand fighting, you know, forcing those clinch engagements if he senses any danger, pick him up, just kind of going that open close where, you know, he's kind of just in and out, which he's really already really good at, but not so much doing it from open space where it's both at kickboxing range, doing it some little more in the pocket. And Alex is dangerous in the pocket. You know, he has that amazing left hook. He has really good rights. He has good uppercuts, so on and so forth. But I think if Izzy's able to tie him up in these engagements, kind of hand fight, overwhelm him. I think Izzy honestly does have more offensive layers, but that's what happens at times. You see a guy that's not as big as a power puncher. You know, he has that slickless layer. He has amazing footwork, and they're also fighting in a cage. You know, they're not fighting in a small ring. So that does give somebody like Izzy time to, you know, use the footwork, use those layers, use that overwhelming offense that he does have. If you watch their first fight, Izzy cut angles, and literally Alex had almost turned in a circle to face him to try and, you know, find out where he was. Izzy was able to back him into that corner and start to just overwhelm him. And in that third round, in their first fight, you know, he had amazing success. Just honestly put it, once he started to get that confidence back up, build those reads, and to just find those openings, overwhelm him, pick at that guard, and then find those opening shots. And then the same thing in the second fight, when he was able to kind of just push forward. You know, he had a standing eight count. And as we know, MMA does not have standing eight counts. What that means in MMA, that means that's a TKO, for being honest, you know. So if he's able to recreate that success, to kind of work upon, build upon what gave him success the first time, use those hand fighting, use those clenches, you know, take the space away from him. And also, Izzy has more MMA fights. If he's able, I don't think he's going to go for straight blast doubles. I don't think he's going to go for singles. But I do think he's able to kind of get some clinch trips, able to kind of get some outside trips, things like that. Trying to find other ways to get the fight to the ground. Maybe catch a kick, go for a trip, things, and so on and so forth. You know, Alex isn't he's not a super duper active clinch fighter. Izzy is. So if he's able to kind of lean on the advantages he has, build upon those, add those layers, and you know, either start to pick them apart, look for opportunistic TKO or optimistic shots, or just honestly run away to the decision. The path to success for Alex, he's a patient fighter. You know, he's not as quick-footed as Izzy. He can be. He doesn't maintain it for as long, but just honestly, keep it at open space. Look for your openings. Izzy likes to lean back. He doesn't really have his hands up as much, so it does give, and he's not as big of a puncher as Alex, so it does give the puncher opportunities to have some successful moments. As we've seen when Izzy fought Jan in that open space against a guy that was equal range, you know, another tall guy, another big guy, things like that, you know. Izzy's used to having that reach advantage. Same thing like with a John Jones. You take that reach advantage away from them, it makes it for a closer fight. So if Alex is able to be patient, I want him to be a little more active, though. You know, a guy like Izzy is just going to kind of run away with the decision if you let him. So he's going to have to look for some moments to capitalize on those shots and kind of get his counters in there when he needs to, and push the pace a little bit more. If he doesn't push the pace, I do think that, you know, he will be on the wrong side of the decision. But as we've seen when Izzy fought Yoel Romero, you can stalemate him, honestly. You know, like, when you deal with a big puncher, a guy that he knows a threat, he's not going to take too many risks. So if Alex is able to be the one that kind of takes that driving wheel, pushes forward, looks for his moments, I do think he does have, we all know he has abilities to finish Israel. So it's just who's able to implement their game plan the best, who's able to make more things work. Alex is an amazing fighter. He's a super duper. He's a huge 185er in the first place. And I think he's a big, strong guy. I do think even in the clinch, if he's able to use his attributes to, you know, have his own success, push the pace forward, look for that left hook. You know, Izzy's one that he leans back. He has his hands down. He likes to evade more so than covering up, or he'll kind of like parry a little bit. If Alex is able to overcome those parries, to be explode in when Izzy leans back, to kind of pyramid him off, chase him down, push that pressure, I do think that he can get the nod as well. I'm looking forward to this fight. This is probably, in my opinion, one of the best cards of the year. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for the support over the years, and have a good day.